Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Order Militaris Radio TV. I'm your host, AJ. We are on with Alina Vidal, who wrote an amazing book on Marie Antoinette, daughter of the Caesar, her life, her times, and her legacy. And I must say, everyone, go over to Amazon, get this book. It's linked into the show page. And welcome, Alina.
Thank you very much. Thank you for inviting me, AJ.
Yeah. Well, since that weird political ad by Donald Trump and his team about Nancy Pelosi calling her a Marie Antoinette figure when they posted "Let them eat ice cream," I thought we need to do a show.
Yeah. I don't know if that was Trump who did that. I know it was Sean Hannity did some of that too, but that really, really annoyed me, because to compare Nancy Pelosi, someone like her who has done everything to promote abortion, to Marie Antoinette is just completely disgusting. Marie Antoinette had many foundling homes for orphans and did everything to help young girls who were expecting a baby out of wedlock. Marie Antoinette helped them, had homes for them and or places for their children. And a lot of times children were abandoned in those days, just left on the street. And Marie Antoinette provided for many foundling hospitals. She would never have countenanced the abortion industry the way Nancy Pelosi does. And Marie Antoinette was very faithful to her Catholic faith, which Nancy Pelosi has publicly abjured many of the teachings of her Catholic faith. So I think it's really irresponsible to compare Marie Antoinette to Nancy Pelosi. And I made a big stink about it online. I wrote to Sean Hannity and anyone who had made that comparison. I wrote to them and told them what the truth was.
So let's tell the truth. Who is the real Marie Antoinette?
Well, Marie Antoinette, to most people, Marie Antoinette is the queen who danced when the people starved. Nothing could be further from the truth. Marie Antoinette came from a very large family. Her mother and father were the Holy Roman Empress and Holy Roman Emperor. Her mother was an Archduchess of Austria who had inherited the throne of Hungary and the throne of Bohemia from her own father. She was a member of the great Habsburg dynasty, which had actually defended the Catholic Church throughout the Protestant Reformation. Her family was very intensely Catholic. Marie Antoinette was brought up as a very devout Catholic. Now, her way of devotion was not, she did not like to be seen as part of what was called the devout party in France, because the devout party in France was actually against the Austrian alliance. Her way of being a Catholic was being very joyful, being very full of charity, giving lots of money to nuns and priests, and also to charities. She had organized many charities. Her faith was a very practical faith. And as she grew older, she did become more prayerful, more devout, especially after the death of her little girl, Sophie Beatrice. She became much more devout. But Marie Antoinette people need to understand what Marie Antoinette really was in order to understand the French Revolution and in order to understand what is going on in the world right now, because the revolution had to demonize Marie Antoinette in order to justify the destruction of the church and society by the French Revolution, the thousands and thousands of deaths of innocent people, the wrecking of monuments and destruction of public buildings and of churches, and the same kinds of things that went on during the French Revolution, especially in what is now known as the Vendée parts of France, which Brittany, Poitou, the southern, south, western parts of France were specially targeted by the revolution, and thousands of people were massacred. Peasants were massacred. People don't realize that more peasants died during the French Revolution than anyone else, and they died because they resisted the revolution. They didn't want their churches and taken away. They didn't want their king taken away. So many things like that that people misunderstand about the French Revolution. And until people understand the French Revolution and Marie Antoinette's role in it, they won't understand what's going on today. Marie Antoinette, because she was the queen, she had to be destroyed. She was the mother of the heir to the throne. She was the mother of the people of France. And as you know, in any home, if you can destroy the mother of a family, then you can get the whole family. So that's why they had to destroy Marie Antoinette, destroy her reputation, and they did this through bad media, bad press, especially pornography. They used lots and lots of pornographic depictions of Marie Antoinette to destroy her reputation among the people. So it was a really a massive propaganda campaign against the queen that they had to, they knew they had to get rid of her in order for the revolution to triumph. So that's pretty much, you know, who she is. She was the 15th daughter of Empress Maria Theresa and Emperor Francis Stephen. Now, I mentioned Maria Theresa first because Maria Theresa was the one who inherited the kingdoms from her father, Charles VI, the Holy Roman Emperor. And then Maria Theresa and her husband became Francis Stephen of Lorraine, became Holy Roman Emperor and Empress. Now, Marie Antoinette, when she was the youngest daughter, she really was not supposed to marry the king into France. That was one of her older sisters was supposed to go. But the sister who was supposed to marry into France died. Actually, she was the sister. She was supposed to marry the king of Naples. She died of smallpox. So Maria Carolina, who was supposed to marry the king of France, or the Dauphin of France, had to marry the king of Naples. So that left Marie Antoinette. When she was 13, her mother realized that she could hardly read and write. She was almost illiterate because they had. She was one of the younger children, and they'd kind of been haphazard about her education. So at the age of 13, her mother took her into her own circle and started really working with her herself, kept her with her day and night to teach her how to be a princess of France, of an Archduchess of Austria, and then later a princess and queen of France. So she had all of that going on, and she was sent to France when she was 14 years old to marry the heir to the throne of France, Louis Auguste, later Louis XVI, and he was 15. They were both very innocent young people, very sheltered, very devout, and so it took them several years to consummate their marriage. And finally, when they were 22, she was 21, he was 22, when they finally consummated their marriage, and they had a beautiful little girl. They had four children all together. But people used that, tried to say things against Louis, that Louis had something wrong with him, that he wasn't able to consummate his marriage, and that was all totally false. It was completely false. If anything, there was probably a defect in Marie Antoinette that made marital relations very difficult at the beginning, but later they were able to, you know, have a full and happy marriage, a very devoted marriage. In fact, Marie Antoinette would not leave her husband, even when people were begging her to, even when her husband was begging her to escape. She would not leave her husband alone. She stayed with him. And, you know, people always say, well, we don't know if Marie Antoinette really loved her husband. Well, to me, staying with someone, even at the cost of your life, that is what love looks like to me. So that is what Marie Antoinette was not the cause of the French Revolution, as many people, even Thomas Jefferson, tried to say. Marie Antoinette was, you know, had no role in politics at all until the revolution came upon them, and so many people had to leave France, so many of their advisors and people they trusted had to leave, that her husband turned to her because he had no one else to trust. And also, after the revolution started in 1789, their little boy, their oldest boy, had died of terrible death of tuberculosis. He was only 7 years old. And her Louis XVI had tuberculosis from the time he was 5 years old. However, he had
taken a lot of fresh air, which had kept it under control. However, he suffered from a side effect of tuberculosis, which is depression. And Louis XVI went into a very deep depression after the death of their oldest son and with the oncoming revolution. So Marie Antoinette really had to kind of get behind him and kind of show help him make it. And so together they were able to survive 4 years into the revolution. They were really supposed to have been killed on the night of October 5th and 6th when the mob came to Versailles and smashed up the queen's room and tried to kill her. They tried to assassinate her in her bed, but she was able to escape. And she was able to calm the crowd down with her presence. She came out into the balcony with her children, and she curtsied to the crowd, and they ended up cheering for her. So they were supposed to have been killed that night, but because of Louis and Marie Antoinette's resourcefulness and their ability to calm the crowd with their personal presence, they were both able to keep their death away. It was only after a war came and then the extreme end of the revolution, the Jacobins, when they took over, then the Louis XVI Marie Antoinette were imprisoned, and they were eventually put to death in 1793. So that is who Marie Antoinette is. Now, please let me know what details you'd like to know about her life. I've been researching her since I was 9 years old. So that's almost 40 years. So, if you let me know what else you want to know.
There was a part in the book about letters and something about a supposed love interest you covered.
Yes. That is a big thing now. They've supposedly decrypted several letters of the Queen, Marie Antoinette, to Count Axel von Fersen. Count Axel von Fersen needs to be seen in the capacity of the Swedish king's envoy to the court of France. He was sent by his king. King Gustavus III had visited Versailles himself incognito in the 1780s, and he just was completely devoted to Louis XVI and Marie Antoinette, and he just loved them so much that when he found out after the revolution started, he knew they were in trouble. He did everything to try, the king of Sweden, did everything to try to help them. However, he was assassinated at a masked ball. And the next king was not as keen, was not as interested in trying to save them. But Axel von Fersen became very close friends with both the king and the queen. Now, of course, Marie Antoinette was a very beautiful woman, and almost any man she looked at was said to be her lover. They accused her of having love affairs, and they said her children weren't really the king's children, and all kinds of lies, which were, have been proven to be lies. And anyone who knew her at the time knew her well, knew that they were lies, because she was actually very modest and was known in her inner circle for her purity and her chastity. She did not like dirty jokes. She didn't like anything that was improper. She had a very high moral tone. It was even higher than the queen who had come before her, who had been very religious. But Marie Antoinette didn't like any plays that were off color. She didn't like any bad language. She didn't allow married women to come without their husbands. If a husband and wife were separated, she wouldn't allow the wife to come. The wives could only come with their husbands at their side. She had no toleration for immorality at all in the court, and that actually turned a lot of people against her. She also would take up a collection for the poor every Sunday. She would walk through the court with a bag and insisting that people give money for the poor people, and a lot of them didn't like that because they'd rather spend the money on gambling. So therefore, she had a lot of enemies at court. A lot of immoral people didn't like her. She was Austrian. They thought she didn't like France, which of course she loved France. Anyway, there were all these rumors about her and several different men, including the one they coupled her with the most was her brother-in-law, who was handsome, the Comte d'Artois, who later became Charles X. Everyone said that he was her lover. Of course, that wasn't true at all. And so later on, Count Fersen was trying to rescue them. Marie Antoinette wrote to many, many different people. She wrote to the Pope at the Vatican. She wrote to Cardinal York. She wrote to many kings and queens and family members trying to get help for herself and her husband. And one of the people she wrote to the most was Axel von Fersen. Now, Axel von Fersen was probably in love with the queen. She may have at some point had feelings for him, but, you know, she never gave, you know, never had an affair or anything like that. However, she needed him to help them. So therefore, she kind of wrote kind of sweet things to him. She wrote that to a lot of people. In fact, some of her women friends even she wrote in a very loving, flowery way, which to us would seem very strange. But Marie Antoinette now was part of the 18th century. You wrote to everyone, you know, my dear heart, you know, I kiss you hard. You know, she was always covering everyone with kisses. And she had a very loving and a flowery way of writing to everyone. So what she wrote to Count Fersen was not necessarily considered, you know, out of not normal for her. That's how she wrote to everyone. And now Count Fersen, she was trying to get Count Fersen to keep helping them. So in the meantime, while Count Fersen was writing to her, saying he was going to help her, he was carrying on an affair with an Italian lady, who, Eleanor Sullivan. She was married to an Irishman. She was the mistress of a Scotsman. And she had a house in Paris near the Tuileries where Marie Antoinette was under house arrest. And she had an attic, a room in the attic where Count Fersen would come and visit and hide from when he needed to hide from the revolutionaries. That's where he would go. And so now the Eleanor Sullivan, you know, was a monarchist. They were trying to help the king and queen escape, and he was carrying on with Eleanor Sullivan for years. All during the time people think he was carrying on with Marie Antoinette, he was carrying on with Eleanor Sullivan. He couldn't have carried on with Marie Antoinette because she was under house arrest. She had guards outside her room. She had the door of her room had to stay open, and the guards were always looking in to make sure, see what she was doing, see, because she had already tried to escape. So they were always watching her. And so she was no way, you know, she couldn't have had an affair if she'd wanted to. Plus, there was a secret passage between her room and her husband's room, so she and her husband could go back and forth to each other's rooms. So, you know, why would she be entertaining a lover when her husband could have come through the hidden door in the paneling at any moment, you know? So it's just the whole thing is nonsense about her having any love affairs. Now, these letters that they've over the years, people keep trying to read. Some of them, most of them were written in secret code. And then Count Fersen would, and anyone she wrote to in secret code, and whoever she wrote to would have to decipher the code, and therefore they'd write the letter in their own handwriting as they were deciphering it. And so most of her letters to Count Fersen and to other people that were in this code. So now some of the letters, there's like a few letters, maybe 10 letters that they have that were in Marie Antoinette's own handwriting, and there are scribbled out passages. And they thought that all those passages were love things, love words of love that Count Fersen had scribbled out. And they found out that most of them, you know, some of them are loving, but they're not like sexy or anything. They're trying to say, oh, they're steamy letters. They're not steamy letters at all. There's a sign of devotion, there's signs of friendship, but they're not necessarily romantic letters. And some of the things that were scratched out, they found through X-ray, were scratched out by the Count. And they were sensitive things. He was very protective of her reputation. So he did scratch out a lot of things she said that were warm and loving because he didn't want people to think they were having an affair. He was very protective of her reputation. And now other things that were scratched out were actually scratched out by the Queen herself. Because when people were writing letters by hand, they couldn't delete something. They would just cross it out with their pen. And so Marie Antoinette wrote very fast, and sometimes she made a lot of mistakes, a lot of spelling mistakes in her letters. And so she would just scribble out what was wrong and rewrite what she was trying to say. So that is what most of the scribbles, they said, were actually from the Queen herself. They weren't hiding anything romantic. So the more they have technology that can actually help read some of the things, the messages between Fersen and the Queen, the more it shows that their relationship was mostly a political one with some friendly overtones, a few little romantic words here and there, but it wasn't a sign of an affair. It was a sign he was very devoted to her. He wanted to save her. But the thing is, you know, with Saracen, chivalry had its limits, because not only was he carrying on with another woman all this time, but later, after Louis XVI and Marie Antoinette were killed, Saracen went to their orphaned daughter, who herself had just gotten out of prison, who was like 17 or 18. She'd been a horrible experience. She'd been in solitary confinement, Marie-Thérèse Charlotte. And Saracen went to her and asked for that he be paid back the money he had spent, and that the Madame de Korff, who was a Russian lady, said that one needed to give Madame de Korff money for the money she had spent in helping them escape. So they went to an orphaned girl and asked for money, you know, and he could have come up with the money himself. He was wealthy, but he went to this orphaned girl and asked for money, you know. So it just shows he was kind of crass. I mean, he liked to think of himself as a romantic hero. I'm not saying he wasn't truly brave and that he wasn't truly dedicated, but, you know, he liked, it was with him, it was more of a romantic thing. He wanted to see himself as a chivalrous knight trying to save this lady who was totally out of his reach. And, of course, he wasn't able to save them. And it was ended up being, you know, it was very sad. And he never, he had wanted to have the triumph of being the one to save the French royal family. He was staking his career on it. And when he failed that, he really never, ever got over that. He was very obsessed with it until he died. And he himself was killed by a mob in 1810 in Sweden. He was killed by a mob and stomped to death by a mob on the same day that he had tried to rescue the French royal family, June 21st. It was very, very sad. Okay.
Let's see. Only 8 minutes left on the podcast side of this recording, so what was their last days like before their...
Her last day, Marie Antoinette's last day, she was and been taken away. Her children, her little boy, had been taken away from her and horribly abused, and he had been forced to... They made him drunk, they showed him pornography, and then they made him testify that his mother had molested him. And she found that out, and she almost died of horror. She was on trial, and they said, your son said this about you. And she stood up, and she looked toward all the women in the audience. She said, "Nature refuses to answer such an accusation put to a mother. Then I appeal to all the mothers who are in this room." And all the women cheered for her. So poor Marie Antoinette was, had this, and her daughter was left alone. She was put in a horrible prison. She was condemned to death, and she was crying because of her children. She didn't want to leave her children, but she was very brave when she went to the guillotine. They sent her a priest who had made his oath to the revolution, who had renounced the papal authority. She would not go to confession to a priest who was not loyal to the Pope. So she refused to go to a confession to that priest. She had, however, received final absolution from a priest who was in the prison, who was a faithful priest, who had come by her cell at a certain time and given her an absolution. And she'd also been able to see a priest in person. The guards had brought a priest to her who said mass in her cell, heard her confession, and gave her Holy Communion before her trial on October 13th. So October 16th, 1793 was the day of her execution. She was very, very brave. She went to the scaffold. She accidentally stepped on the hand of the executioner, and she said, "Pardon, monsieur, I did not mean to do it." And later, the executioner said, when she was right before they were about to cut her head off, she looked toward the temple tower where her children were imprisoned, and she said, "Goodbye, my children, I go now to join your father." You know, meaning she was going to her husband, Louis the 16th. So her last thoughts were of her husband and her children. And then, of course, she was decapitated and thrown in a mass grave.
Was her Louis the 16th and the little king ever found and properly buried as they should have been?
Well, Louis the 17th, yeah, he was, they did find his heart. And that was taken from him. The whole thing's very mysterious. A lot of that is covered in my second novel, Madame Royale, about the Princess Marie-Thérèse Charlotte, the daughter of Louis XVI and Marie Antoinette, and how she searched for her brother and to find out what happened to him. Some people thought he had been smuggled out and replaced with another boy, and that boy was the boy who actually died on June 8th, 1795. However, the little boy who died in the temple, they took out his heart. They did a DNA test on it just in the 1990s, I believe, and they said that it showed him to be related to the Habsburgs. So it's assumed that he was the son of Louis XVI and Marie Antoinette. However, you know, there were a lot of children around who were in the royal family who were descended from the Habsburgs, because there were many Habsburg princesses had married into the French royal family. So the blood was really kind of all mixed up. It wasn't just pure Habsburg blood or pure Bourbon blood. You know, they were all mixed up together. So they buried his heart. I've seen it where it's buried in the Basilica of Saint-Denis in Paris. And so it's really concluded to be him. But they never really, they did find some bones in the Madeleine Cemetery. But they were very long. They were larger, too large for a boy of 10. They were more like a teenager. And people that saw him said he looked a lot, didn't look like he was 10. He looked like he was 15. He looked like he was an older boy. So many people thought that the real Dauphin had been replaced by an older boy, that he was a boy who was an illegitimate child of someone, and that's how he could have had the Habsburg DNA. So it's a mystery. Most people do believe that he did die on June 8th, 1795. And that his heart is buried in the basilica.
Were the remains of the king and queen found properly buried as well?
Yes, yes. There were people who memorized where the king and queen were put. And they would bring flowers and mark them with flowers. And all through the time of Napoleon, the revolution, the time of Napoleon, and they would actually pick flowers from where the king and queen were buried and send the bouquet to their daughter, Madame Royale, who was in exile in the Russian Empire. So later, when Madame Royale came back at the Restoration as the Duchesse d'Angoulême, she married her first cousin, they came back to France, and they dug where the king and queen had been seen to have been put, and they recognized them. They recognized the queen by her jaw. Anyway, they were both identified, and they were buried at a solemn January 21st, 1815. They had a state funeral for Louis XVI and Marie Antoinette in Paris, and they were buried at the Basilica of Saint-Denis with their ancestors. Now, as you know, in 1792, the great Basilica of Saint-Denis was ransacked by the revolutionaries. They dug up opened the graves of the French kings and queens going back to the Merovingians, and they threw them all out and just totally rifled and disrespected the remains and did terrible things to them. So when Louis XVI and Marie Antoinette were buried there, they were kind of almost alone, because the basilica had been so. They did get some of the bones of some of the kings and queens back. If you go there, a lot of the tombs are still there, but a lot of them were lost forever. But Louis XVI and Marie Antoinette are beneath the high altar, buried beneath the high altar, and you can go down there and see them, and they are there, buried together. So, but their daughter, she didn't go to the funeral, because daughters weren't supposed to go to funerals. She stayed in her private oratory and prayed during the whole ceremony.
That's good. Yeah, I've been following trying to get those posts on Louis the 17th, and there's always been YouTube masses for the king and the queen, but none for him.
No. They really didn't. They tried. Well, Louis the 18th was the king at the time, and Louis the 18th really didn't want to draw attention to the rumors that Louis the 17th might still be alive, because Louis the 18th was trying to. Some people think that Louis the 18th, who had been corresponding with Robespierre during the revolution, And Louis XVIII, as Comte de Provence, he was the brother of Louis XVI. He had actually been in league with a lot of the revolutionaries. And in fact, they called him a crowned Jacobin. And so he was considered, you know, he was kind of a shady character, and he